Welcome to the Global Australian Podcast. I'm Johanna Pittman, CEO of Advance, the Global Australian Network. We're the non-profit organisation committed to strengthening Australia by nurturing a globally connected mindset at home and abroad. One of the ways we do this is by shining a spotlight on the impact of extraordinary global Australians. In this podcast series, we meet 25 game changers recognised in the 2023 Global Australian Awards. These remarkable individuals generously share their stories with us, giving us insight into their international career journey, its highlights and challenges, and what motivates them in their work. I hope you enjoy getting to know the inspiring game changers of 2023. In this episode, we meet Peter Hazelhurst, a 2023 game changer in technology and entrepreneurship. Peter Hazelhurst is a global fintech entrepreneur and investor who has spent 30 years leading and building tech companies in the heart of Silicon Valley. Peter is currently co-founder and CEO of Synctera, a new technology company that empowers community banks to embrace fintech innovation. Joining me on this interview is Kathy Campbell, the producer of the Global Australian Awards. In simple terms, how would you describe what you do? And let's say you're talking to a high school audience, how would you say what your day-to-day looks like?
So my day-to-day as an executive, as a CEO, whatever, is more focused on building a team, figuring out the strategy of the company, and figuring out what are we going to build, when are we going to build it, and who's it for. At the same time, a big part of my job is figuring out how do we make payroll. So it's always be raising, and always fundraising is just like every single day I'm talking to investors, I'm talking to customers, I'm talking to partners, and balancing, we want to build this, it's going to cost that, how do we pay for it, and how do we scale up the company?
And this has been a journey for you. You've been in this space for a while. Tell us a little bit about how you came to get to where you are today.
Yeah, it's been a long time. I guess I'm 31 years into working in Silicon Valley and doing tech stuff. I first came to the US in 93 to do my first startup. It was a company called Phoenix International. And we built the first core banking system on Windows. It was one of these things where you didn't know you couldn't do it, so we just built it anyway. And retrospectively, you know, one of the challenges that we've observed is lots of people have come to me and say, hey, would you invest in another core banking system? And the answer is always no, because I know how hard it is and I wouldn't do it again if I had to. That being said, we had a really great run at Phoenix, and the team that we put together way back in 30 years ago, many of them still work there. It's kind of crazy. And the product is still in production. Customers still run the programs that we wrote 30 years ago, which is kind of cool. Since then, I've had a bunch of different turns and choices, 10, 15 different startups of different sizes and scales. Most fun, I would say, were a couple of them. One, we did a mobile email company called Izel, based in Pittsburgh, spin out of Carnegie Mellon. And we sold that to Nokia about 5 months, 6 months later. And so I worked at Nokia during the heyday of Nokia, when half the world was, everything was Nokia powered, which was really crazy in 2002. And we built email for your phone. So it's hard to believe, but there was a time when you couldn't get email on your phone. In the US, people didn't even text until like 2004. And so it was kind of this interesting transition, people getting data plans on their phones, people starting to seek data. And we started to build ShowMeMy, at that time, Yahoo and Hotmail and stuff like this. And then we got connections to corporate email and so on. Nokia was super fun. Then I went to work for a big company, or an emerging company called Yodlee. And what we did was we helped really big banks, B of A, Chase, Wells, NBC, and so forth, build online banking for their customers. So imagine things that you sort of rely on today, like a spending chart or how's my budget going, things like that that you see in Bank of America and so on. We helped build that for them. And that was really fun. I did that for 7 years. Those folks went public a couple of years after I left. In the meantime, I went to work at Google and was really lucky to work on some really fun things, including launching Google Wallet, which was the first way to pay with your phone. So our team was responsible for basically making it possible to do tap and pay on a phone, which was really kind of crazy. Like at the time, people were looking at us like, is this insane? Is this really possible? And we did it. It was pretty cool. After that, I did a couple more startups, did a wine startup, which was super duper fun, helping people sell wine to each other in parties and so forth. That was really crazy. And then for the last 2 years before I started Synctera, I worked at a company called Uber, which you've probably heard of. And we built payments, and I ran payments and risk for Uber across the globe. So think of every time you get in and out of an Uber, you want to make a payment. And the classic Uber experience is you don't even really do anything, you just leave. But in many parts of the world, we also had cash-based payments. So think of handing over cash to a driver, kind of like a taxi, and then how to get change and all of that sort of stuff. We solved all of that. We were operating in 65, 70 countries. It was kind of manic. It was very, very real-time, all the time, every day. And then you can imagine our product changed over time as we added Uber Eats. We had some cool things like jump bikes and rides and stuff like that. All different sorts of parts of Uber. That was really great. And then most recently is my new startup, Synctera, which is somewhat of a connection between everything that I've done up till now. So we work with community banks, so banks 10 billion and below in the US, and we help them become part of the fintech ecosystem. So imagine you've probably heard of Venmo or PayPal or some of these sorts of things. We help people build the next Venmo or the next PayPal. And that ranges from a really fun company that we work with called Wahed, which is building a neobank or a challenger bank for the Muslim community. And the challenge for the Muslim community is you can't earn interest. It's against Sharia law. So imagine your paycheck gets deposited into your bank account, and immediately we go and buy gold. And then whenever you swipe your debit card, we sell the gold in real time to cover. So your balance is always zero. You have a sort of a synthetic balance in gold, but in practice at the bank, it's zero. So anyway, long-winded way of saying all types of different sorts of things in fintech and banking, big companies, small companies, Nokia, Uber, Google, but it's fun. I love creating stuff.
I can hear that. And most, it sounds like each of those payment challenges or challenges more generally, it keeps you going and takes you from startups into large companies and big name companies. What motivates you each day?
I think the most fun part of the job every day is hanging out with the team. And it's kind of weird because at Synctera is my first company that's completely remote. So I used to work at Google, I used to work at Uber, and they were like notoriously, you must be in person, everybody get together. And so all my energy, you can tell I'm slightly extroverted, was about like getting in a room and hanging out together. I'm here in a WeWork by myself, there's no one in here, I'm in Chicago, and I'm like, where is everybody? But they're on Zoom, they hang out. And so building a great team is really fun. And the team is just the nucleus, that's the people that build. There's the extended team, which are our investors and our business partners and so on. And then there's the customer layer. And then there's the press and the media and so forth. And just being able to bring cool ideas to life, challenge the status quo, that's super fun for me.
Wow. You must have a bunch of challenges, though, with, you know, in trying to tackle these new problems. Give us an example of the sort of challenges that you can hit, the roadblocks you can hit when you're trying to do things for the first time and introduce new products to market.
Well, the first one is, you know, it's like the if you build it, will they come challenge. So everybody sort of says, hey, I have this cool idea, I'm going to go build something. And then your question is like, does anyone believe in your idea? And it's this like really sort of scary moment where you announce yourselves and you say, is there someone on the other side of that email? And when we launched the company in October of 2021 at this big event in payments and banking called Money 2020, we sort of cheated, to be fair. I hosted a party for 1,000 people and said, hey, come to my party. It's a cool story. And it's an easy way to get people to know that you exist, and that was nice. But after that, when people started calling us and saying, hey, can we use your platform, that was really validating and really great. But I would say, you know, the standard entrepreneurial thing is like this feeling of like, is what I'm doing real? And are there actual humans on the other side of this that believe in what you're doing? And having the confidence or the craziness to basically jump in and say, I don't care if they don't believe. I'm sure it's right. I'm going anyway. And when you're starting from scratch and you need a lot of money to get there, the first thing you have to do is convince a bunch of investors to say, I believe in your idea too. And that one's just like this, you know, awesome like connection of like throwing out something and saying, do you get it? Do you believe? And I remember, like, we had two term sheets for our Series C round, and they were basically the same. Two really great firms that wanted to invest in us, and we were raising $12 million, which is quite a lot for a two month old startup. And it was kind of fun. So one of the folks, not only did they believe, they actually picked up on some stuff that I liked a football team called the Pittsburgh Steelers. And so in the term sheet, they actually wrote in, we will go to the opening game of the Pittsburgh Steelers. I was like, it's yours. Let's go. And that's the human part that people don't, it's not just transactional. This is a long-term relationship. So these people I've known for a long time, and you build on that trust of human connection. And the more you can do that, the better. COVID was super hard for building a human connection. And trust me, I was like, as soon as I possibly could, I was getting on a plane to see people despite the risks, because I wanted to bridge that thing that we'd done over Zoom into a human connection.
Wow. You've had obviously mentored many Australians over the years, and they've come and visited you and tried to learn more about how you've done what you've done. What does it mean to you to be named a game changer in the Global Australian Awards this year?
I think it's humbling. It's amazing. I think it's definitely a privilege. So there's a lot of folks that I get to meet, partly because I help kids through school with a scholarship that I set up for IT guys and gals. And part of it is people that land here in the US and just sort of randomly look me up, which is great. It's super fun. And getting to meet them and to sort of be able to help them or advise them or give them thoughts. If even just one of them gets value out of that, that's really great. It turns out that the market for sharing ideas is actually really good in Silicon Valley. That's one of the things we have, which is great. But there isn't a super deep connectedness in the Australian community. So being part of being able to evangelize that and help people connect is really, really great. And I'm really honored to do this. I think I don't know that I've done enough that makes it worthy of that, but if it's helpful to others, that would be great.
Oh, I'm sure already some people will credit their success in the US to some of the early advice you gave. So I'm sure it is, and we're looking forward to celebrating it with you. I'm sure you were asked a lot about giving advice to people earlier in their career. And what advice do you give to someone who's fresh-faced and particularly with your scholarship fund, I'm sure they ask this very question, advice you'd give to someone who says they want to build a company, they want to be a startup founder. What advice would you share with them?
So I think it all comes down to doing what you love. And there's so much stress and energy zaps that happen when you start a company. If you don't actually like what you're doing, there's no upside. Like, why would you do something that costs you all this anxiety to get going if it's not actually somewhere you want to be? And I see this a lot where people, this sort of this tradition in education and stuff where get into the hardest class you can. Do law at Sydney, do medicine at Sydney. And even if you don't like medicine or you don't like law, but you actually wanted to do drama or theatre or whatever. But there's this sort of premise that if you do the hard things, you know, good luck for you. Invariably, I found that the people that really are the most interesting and best entrepreneurs know where they want to go and know how hard it's going to be and prepare themselves with this sense of I can be resilient and I can and power through. And if they surround themselves with the right cohort of people, things are going to be possible. I've always believed that this is hierarchy of how you live and operate. And the first and most important thing is to be healthy. And healthy is everything from emotional health to psychological health to physical health. Like, if you're unwell physically, you can't do anything else. And you have to start there. And if you can't get that right, stop. Then you need to be surrounded by people that you care about and that care about you. So friends, family, and that sort of thing. And then and only then can you start thinking about work. And a lot of people mess this up and think, I'm going to come to Silicon Valley, I'm going to make $1 billion, and it's going to be great, so I'm going to work, so that I can be healthy. And it doesn't actually work that way. If you're not actually foundationally in a good place, nothing's going to happen. And everyone will tee off that bad energy if you have it. And so be healthy, be well. Have great friends and family, people that you care about and that care about you. And the work stuff is actually relatively the easy bit.
That's fantastic advice. And I'm sure sort of something a little bit contrary to what a lot of people have operated on, particularly pre-COVID. That's all my questions. Over to Brendan and Kathy, if I've missed anything or if there's something else you'd like to ask.
I do have a question, actually. Interesting, Peter, you were talking about the sharing of ideas and that there is very much that culture in Silicon Valley. Is that unique to Silicon Valley or is it broadly more US? And why do you think there is a difference between the sharing of ideas in Australia and, say, Silicon Valley or broadly the US?
I would say there's a couple of thoughts for you on this. I would say America in general and Silicon Valley in particular has this amazing cultural dynamic of failure is not a bad thing. And it's totally okay for your startup not to work out. Obviously, if you do it with malfeasance, then something you should be held accountable for it. But just because your idea isn't resonating with the market or COVID happens or whatever, doesn't mean you're a bad person. And there's so much energy around investing in the person the next time for the next success. And it's sort of a paradox, but one of the things I've observed is the best founders have failed at least once before. It's not their first at bat. And so because you learn so much when things don't work out, I know I have, I've learned how terrible and unfun it is to have to let people go when the market changes or things didn't work out. I would say the interesting and unique thing about Silicon Valley is that you can sit in the Starbucks on University Avenue in Palo Alto and just listen. And there are all these nerds hanging out, sharing ideas, and no one cares if you jump into their conversation and say, hey, I know an answer to that question. It's surreal. And I don't know where else you would sit where that sort of cultural phenomena of sharing and just solving problems, even if you don't work together, is actually sort of just endemic in the experience. I think Silicon Valley is really special in that way. And it's unique in that there are so many founders and technologists and creators and builders and designers and musicians and everything else that all get the vibe and the energy from creating something that new. And they thrive on the fact that serendipitously, you'll meet some random person that knows something about what you're working on. It was like working at Google. One of the crazy things about working at Google is it doesn't matter how good you are at something, there's always someone else there that's like twice as good as you. And so you always approach the problem with an exploration or a learn from others type of mentality. And I don't know, something special about Silicon Valley. I haven't seen it anywhere else. I spent a lot of time in New York. I spent a lot of time in Boston and Chicago and LA. Silicon Valley is special. It's different.
Yeah. Wow. That's great. Brendan, anything you wanted to
I do have one, because you're talking about Silicon Valley there with and the way people just jump in. Do you think elsewhere it's because people are protective of their ideas, though, that they're not wanting to share?
Yeah, so there's this phenomena in the rest of the world of sign a non-disclosure agreement before you start talking about stuff. And the reality is ideas, it's like everybody has the same ideas. That shit's easy. The hard part is building and having a team that can go and execute. And like, I hear it all the time from founders, like, will you sign this NDA before I send you my pitch deck? And I'm like, no, I'm not going to do it. And they're like, but it's secret. And I'm like, talk to the hand. What I need to see is cool idea, cool team, cool execution, cool dynamic, and then you have a chance. And then the reality is 90% of startups pivot from whatever you said you were going to do to something else. So the idea doesn't really matter. It's more like, can you build?
Thank you for listening to this episode. For more inspiring stories of global Australian game changers, please go to our website advance.org.